Good morning. Senator George, are you feeling better or almost better?
I'm getting almost better, which is very good.
Well, we are going to continue on reserve funds and continue to look at that. We have four proposals today. We have one other proposal that I've worked on with the Oregon Business Association. Who's my co-sponsor on that? Albina? Senator Nelson, I believe? Well, so we'll come back to that proposal because we haven't received it yet in committee. So we'll return, although, as you see, these are all...
Senator Nelson.
So these are all just for public hearing, and my goal would be for us to look at each proposal this morning and maybe one more next week, and then try to find if we can come to some sort of relative consensus on where we'd like to go in terms of setting up a reserve or stability fund or augmenting the one we have. Paul.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we've contacted the offices of all the sponsors, so we anticipate each of them to be here. But first, I've got just a one-sheet summary for you of the four bills that are scheduled for a public hearing. All of them have to do with stability funds. The first is SJR 29, and as you recall from yesterday, we talked about kind of looking at these funds in terms of four characteristics: their revenue source, what triggers they have, what's the size or cap, and what are the uses of that fund. And the other thing I put in there was the implementation dates, which can be important as you plan ahead. The first bill there is SJR 29. There's also some implementing language in Senate Bill 974, which isn't posted today, but is in the possession of the committee. The revenue source that is proposed is a revenue that is 1% above forecast, above the close of session forecast. That calculation is done in two pieces, just as the 2% kicker is done today. Separating corporate income and excise tax revenue from all other general fund revenue. Now, keep in mind that what we call the personal kicker is predominantly personal income taxes, but includes all other general fund revenue, such as cigarette tax revenue that's in the general fund, interest earnings, criminal fine and assessments. So all the other general fund components go into that calculation, and that would remain the same under this bill. And anything above 1% above the close of session forecast would go into the newly established reserve fund. The fund would also retain its interest earnings in the fund, so that would accumulate along with the surplus kicker revenue. The triggers that are used are the same as the Education Stability Fund, and recall there's three there. One is the has to do specifically with the forecast used to develop the budget, and that would typically be our May 15 forecast. And if that calls for a 3% decline in revenue relative to the current appropriation level, then the fund can be accessible. But the other two that we think are much more likely are the declining employment over a two-quarter period, and also the revenue forecast over the course of the biennium drops by more than 2% below the close of session. So those triggers would stay the same. The difference here in accessing the fund versus the current Education Stability Fund is a two-thirds vote. As you recall, there's a three-fifths vote on the current Stability Fund. The fund size is 10%. It does have a different trigger for a release of kicker refunds and credits at 11%. That's so you don't get a kicker refund when you've got 10.01% above. So it would work the same way as the kicker does in the sense you have a trigger that's separate than the actual amount that is refunded. So once it gets over 11%, then it would be 1% or more that would be refunded or credited to corporations. The uses of the fund are general purposes, so you would presumably come into special session and allocate those dollars if you access the fund. And the first biennium in which stability fund would apply would be the 05-07 biennium, so you'd make the calculation following the 05-07 biennium. The other stability fund is the SJR 23, and Senator Starr will be here to talk about that. That revenue source, it's also a constitutional provision. It sets aside 3% of the general fund revenue forecast, and in fact, what it does is refer to the part in the Constitution under the Education Stability Fund that is one of the triggers, which is that May 15 forecast. It's the only reference we have to that forecast in the Constitution. Then you make a calculation following the biennium. If you met or exceeded that forecast, that 3% would be transferred. If it's less than the forecast but still above 97% of it, then you would transfer that difference. The interest earnings in the fund are retained unless there's a decision by the legislature to appropriate dollars to capital projects. And then there's a creation of the capital projects fund under fund size. The triggers are the same as the Education Stability Fund. The fund size is set at 10%. When it exceeds 10%, then additional revenue is transferred into the capital projects funds for one-time projects. The uses when the fund is withdrawn, when the triggers are met, is for general purposes. The first budget this would apply to would be the 07-09 budget. So that would be the budget the 07 legislature is working on. And essentially what would happen under this provision, if the voters approve it, is that the legislature would be able to appropriate 97% of the May forecast. It would have to set aside 3% that would be a projected ending balance. And then if indeed that's realized, then it would be transferred to the stability fund. These, of course, are both constitutional provisions that would go to the next general election. The other two bills that you have today are SJR 19 and SJR 2. They both call for modifications of the Education Stability Fund. The first, SJR 19, increases the lottery earnings dedication from 18% to 22%, starting with the 09-11 biennium, and it does also increase the cap from 5% to 10% of the prior biennium revenue, general fund revenue. Once the cap is reached, recall there's a provision currently that once the cap is reached at 5%, then additional revenue would flow into a sub-account for school capital matching grants. And that sub-account, the percentage dedication drops to 15% under current law. It would go to 20% under SJR 19. Finally, SJR 2 changes the fund size, raises the cap from 5% to 10% of prior biennium general fund revenue. Keep in mind our discussion yesterday about the cap is that really the whether we reach that cap or not depends on the growth rate of lottery relative to the growth rate of general fund revenue. So it becomes most relevant the faster lottery grows relative to general fund revenue, because then you would catch up to that cap.
Thank you. Today is March 1st, committee, and as we know, March 1st is Paul Warner's birthday. So we won't sing him happy birthday, because that might spoil his birthday, unless we have someone in the audience that would like to lead that. But happy birthday, Paul.
Oh. Thank you very much.
Well, we have a volunteer who... Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Paul. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much. Although I still remember in the 2002 special session, mm-hmm. Senator Westland singing that, and down in one of the hearings, we were in special session. On March 1st, I won't bring up those memories.
Well, given the recent news, yes. Hopefully on your birthday next year there will be no special session. Which, sticking with the revenue forecast, I think we're safe there. At least look to be safe there. Well, happy birthday, Paul. We
thank
really
you
appreciate everything that you do for all of us.
Well, thank you.
Frank Morris, Senator Morris, we're going to hear your bill first. So if you'd like to come up and walk us through SJR 29. And then the order that we'll go is we'll do Senator Starr, Bruce Starr's bill, following Senator Morris's, and then SJR 19, and then SJR 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Frank Morris, State Senator from District 8. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you this morning. A question to ask possibly is a good idea in 2003 still a good idea in 2005? I would remind you that this bill was known as SJR 2 in the 2003 session. It passed the Senate with a 21 aye vote, 7 nays. And by head count in the House, had 46 votes in favor of this resolution. But as you all know, the committee chair chose not to hear this bill. The need for a stability fund is without question, and I don't think that's even being argued by anyone in this assembly. It's become painfully obvious, the need for stability in critical services.
I and all the birthday hoopla didn't open a public hearing on your bill, so just
okay.
Let me
thank you.
Open a public hearing on SJR 29.
Okay, thank you.
No, everything else you said is not.
It's off the record now. Yeah. Okay, do we have to back up and start over again, Mr. Chairman?
It's still a good idea, though.
Okay.
2 years later.
The need for a stability fund is, in fact, universally accepted. The question is, how do we fund it? Do we fund it out of current revenues, or do we fund it out of future revenues that this bill addresses? And there's a lot of information that I could present to you with respect to the details of rainy day funds, what other states have done, but I'd like to just dismiss that and focus, if you would, on the handout that I have presented to you in my handwriting at the top. It says, regarding a cumulative effect of unfunded voter initiatives. And I believe this addresses the issue of where should the funds come from to fund a stability fund. And this was done by legislative revenue. Paul Warner prepared this in the interim. And the question that I wanted to have answered was, what effect has voter initiatives had on our discretionary spending? And if you just go down that slide, or the paper, and there are slides that Paul has prepared to go with this, I might have to ask the question, Paul, has this information been presented to the committee yet?
No, it hasn't, Senator. I mean, we've looked at the patterns, but we haven't seen these particular slides.
Okay, well, thank you. As you can see, the first calculation is that spending from the general fund lottery revenue has more than doubled in the 90s. And therein lies the claim that government has been out of control in spending. But then the next line down, the summary, a large portion of spending growth was caused by voter initiatives. And you can see that the actual dollar impact from biennium to biennium. And then the next category, general fund lottery spending grew 12% between 89, 91, and 03, 05, but less than 1% per year when adjusted for initiatives and inflation. And what I'd like to draw your attention to is the last summary on this page, because I think it drives to the issue of where should we try to find the revenues for a stability fund. And the statement, general fund lottery spending is now lower than 1989-91 on a per-person basis when adjusted for initiatives and inflation. So if you look at the 89-91 and the per capita, you're looking at $1,625 per capita spending of discretionary funds in the state. And then you fast forward to 03-05, and you're looking at $1,453 per capita, adjusted for inflation and initiatives. And what this suggests to me, and it's just absolutely a bell ringer clear, that the pressures on our budget to fund current policy that we drive and what populist budgeting has driven in this state, those pressures will make it exceedingly difficult to create any kind of meaningful stability fund out of current revenues. The demand for these scarce dollars is so great, and it was evidenced by the press release yesterday by the Democrats in terms of needing to support critical services. Those pressures are so great, and if you look at essentially the hands that have been tied for discretionary spending on our part by what voters have said we must do, has created a pressure that I think would be I just don't see how you can take current revenues with these kind of pressures and build a meaningful stability fund. That the difference between the $1,625 per capita in 89-91 and today the $1,453, the sacrifice has largely been in education, higher ed, community colleges, and in fact K-12. So I believe in terms of where those funds should come from, as a practical matter, they should come when times are good and the revenues actually exceed the forecasted revenues because we've had an uptick in the economy. And that is I think, is a logical place to take them, and as a practical matter, is probably the only realistic source of a meaningful stability fund. So, Mr. Chairman, colleagues, I would leave you with that thought, and I appreciate the work that Paul Warner has done in analyzing this this issue.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Morse, Senator Brzezinski.
Actually, a comment. Frank, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to put this together. I mean, it's very nice to have demonstrative exhibit to actually demonstrate exactly what's happened. I mean, I know many of us have talked to our constituents as to the impact that voter initiatives have when we don't have the accountability of how you're actually going to fund those new programs. And as you know from your work, I mean, we have some of them that are just, the cost drivers are just unbelievable. And they're going to continue to drive the state budget until we get a better understanding that if we really want to have these come through the initiative process, there needs to be the responsibility of us also having some mechanism to fund those or direction as to what services they want to cut.
Thank you.
Further questions? So the following proposals we're going to hear, and there's about four or five of them, from the governors to Senator Starrs and Senator Schrader's, to one that Senator Nelson and I have put forth, all use existing revenue or some portion of existing revenue. And given the news that we've had on employment and revenue, I guess that's going to be the main argument that you might hear, and that differs from your proposal, is that perhaps the forecast and employment and just the tea leaves look good or a lot better today than they did a month ago or a year ago. And that would be one of the central arguments in the next four or five proposals. And I don't know if you want to comment. You kind of did in your opening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. It's true. The tea leaves are looking better. But still, we're not addressing the structural deficit that exists in this state. Clearly, the projected revenues are not going to be adequate to meet the existing programmatic demands. They're just not there. To think that we're going to pull meaningful revenues out of even a favorable forecast, I think is a very difficult hill to climb. I don't think we'll get there. There is a structural deficit. We're not coming to grips with it in this body. I would suggest to you that in fact, if we were to use existing revenues to fund a rainy day fund, as a practical matter, the only way that you're going to get access to those is to eliminate programs. Probably take at least $400 to $500 million of funding off the table and actually reduce government by that amount. And this structural deficit is a real issue, and we just haven't come to grips with it in this body. It's fundamental. We have demands that exceed our ability to supply.
Mm-hmm. So on the question of triggers, you put in 2/3 votes. Are there other, well, in developing your triggers, what was your thought? And then, obviously, this has to go to a vote of the people.
Yes.
And so the trigger becomes central to obtaining that vote of the people. Did you consider, I guess, a wide range? That's always the debate. Do you have a political trigger? Do you have an economic trigger that ensures you're really in a recessionary time to tap the fund?
Mr. Chairman, colleagues, what we did is essentially mirror the access that's available to the Education Stability Fund, and that's what we attempted to do.
And just the final question I have is just going to a vote of the people. You included data from 2003 from Moore polling firm that suggests that this would have, your proposal would have a decent, better than decent chance at the polls. Any comment that you would have to this committee before we send it out? We try to be really cognizant of having the consent of and seeing a campaign in place that would actually prevail at the polls.
The polling that we did, Mr. Chairman, colleagues, back in May of 2003, I think it illustrated a pretty overwhelming consensus amongst voters that we need stability in funding critical services. We're 71% of the population of Oregon. This was a statewide poll, favored amending the kicker. And I know that in some circles is not a popular issue, but at that point in time, 71% said yes, we are in favor of amending it. And in fact, I didn't bring that sheet with me, but the one you have, I think it was 62% were actually in favor of the specifics of this proposal.
62%. Yeah. Other questions for Senator Frank Morris as he gets the polling document?
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I know you've spent a good amount of your time working on this, getting the polling done on it, and working with LRO to perfect your proposal. So it's one we take very seriously.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Starr and Senator Schrader, we have two other folks to testify on this bill. How are you on time? Okay. Oh, you do? Okay. Well, then let's. And how about you, Rick? Or you'll just general create. Okay. Close the public hearing on SJR 29 and open a public hearing on SJR 23. Paul, you've kind of given us the overview.
Summary sheet. Mm-hmm.
It's on your summary sheet, Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, colleagues. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr, represent Senate District 15. Appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning on SJR 23. And like Senator Morris before me, I'm not going to make the case of why we need a rainy day fund or budget stabilization fund. I think that that case has been well made. Virtually every session that I've been in this building, I think going back to even when I was an intern in the Senate in 1987, I think there's been budget stabilization fund concepts, bills introduced that would create such a thing. And yet, for some reason, for a lot of reasons, one has never been created other than the Education Stability Fund that I believe was created in 95 session. Maybe it was 97. I have just one simple simple statement to make, and I think the simpler you make the rainy day fund, the better. If you complicate these things, I think it makes it more difficult for us to sell them to the public. And using that as a baseline, I think that's the beauty of basically taking a percentage of the budget and putting it away. And that's what I propose to do here. In SJR 23, we take 3%. 3% of the general fund revenues, and we put it into a budget stabilization account. It's not hard to explain. It's simple. The public would understand it. You're not using any really complicated formulas of a percentage of this or a percentage of that, or if the state budget grows by a certain amount, we're gonna reduce your kicker by a certain amount. It's very simple, and I think simple is good, especially when you are having a conversation with Oregonians. As you look at the typical Oregonian, I think most folks understand that you, in prudent budgeting, you take a portion of money and you put it aside, whether it's your personal budget, whether it's a business. It's called making preparations for those times when life isn't so good. My fear, colleagues, is that if we don't accomplish something along this line this session, there's going to be a turnover in this building. And there's going to be legislators that fill these chairs that didn't live through five special sessions. They didn't go through the process that we all went through in cutting those budgets. And whether this proposal, Senate Joint Resolution 23, is the right one, I think you'll hear others that I could support. But I would just ask that you keep it simple, that we don't... I'm one that believes that if you try to modify the kicker, I think that you have a very difficult time passing it with the voters. I understand there's polling that may say otherwise, but I still think that in the middle of a campaign, you mess with the kicker, you find it very hard to get things passed. I understand the proposals that are floating around that would create a cap on spending as a way to deal with the kicker issue. In that case, perhaps you could make the argument if you're gonna cap spending, you can make the argument on the kicker. I think that's the only trade-off that you could make that perhaps could sell. But even then, I think it's a tough sell. If you use the kicker as a funding source, I think that if you keep it simple and tell Oregonians that we're going to be prudent with your money, we're going to take a portion of it, we're going to set it aside, we're going to save it for those times when the budget isn't so flush. I think that's the way that you can make this happen. I use the same triggers that we use in the Education Stability Fund. They seem to work, and I didn't think we needed to recreate that wheel. What happens, in SJR 23, you build it till it's 10% of the budget, but instead of allowing that money then to flow back into the budget as a small break on state spending, not a huge break, but a small break on state spending, SJR 23 would require that money to get spent on capital projects, one-time-only projects. So you don't build that baseline spending anymore, that ongoing demand for state resources. You then create opportunity to spend things on capital, one-time kinds of resources. So I guess my message this morning is SJR 23 the right answer? I think it might be. I think there's other good ways to make this happen. I think keep it simple so you don't have to take more than a few seconds to explain it to Oregonians, and you have a better chance of getting it passed. And lastly, it's very, in my mind, critically important that we come together, Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate members, to get this job done this session. Those are my points, my message, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Starr. Questions for Senator Bruce Starr? Well, I have one or two. So just on capital projects, I'm thinking back to the special sessions. Do you think that would have inhibited us at all if we were limited to capital projects? When a lot of the requests or the needs seem to be in operational.
The money in the stability fund, when you have the vote, could be spent on anything. But once you reach the cap, the 10% cap. Then at that point, the 3% could only be spent on capital projects. So you build the fund to 10%, but you still, every session, you put 3% aside. So whatever's left over,
that's all capital.
You can only spend on capital projects. So you build over maybe three or four biennials, you build the stability fund to 10% of the general fund budget. You're still putting 3% aside every session, but you don't need all of that 3% to maintain that 10% amount, that excess. You could spend on capital only.
Oh,
that way, every session, you're only spending 97% of the budget on ongoing regular general fund items.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you have the what I would consider a small break in state spending. Not a very significant break, but a small one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you thought about possible, I know it's in here, election dates that you would?
Well, this would refer it back to the next general election, so it would be on November of 06. Clearly, we could change that to, and I've to a large extent, I don't know that it would matter that much. Clearly, the general election in November would generate the most number of votes. The other thing is, you know, recognizing the budget situation we're in today, that this wouldn't, if it were voted on in 06, it wouldn't kick in until the next biennium.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't have to feel the pain right away, you know, but if that was an issue. But the reality is you're taking money, and that's why this hasn't happened before, as Senator Moore said, because it's hard to put money that you can spend today when you have real needs today and say, oh, we're going to put this money aside. Why? Because it's the prudent thing to do. See? So, and this, it wouldn't affect this budget, this biennium. But moving forward, you put this passes, it goes in the Constitution, and we're required then to put this money aside. You know, is 3% the right number? I think it's probably the right number, but would 2% work? Well, 2% would be better than nothing. You know, so I'm open to any of those kinds of discussions. Part of it is what's possible, but I think that we've got to get this job done this session. Otherwise, again, the employment numbers are up. You know, we've got a positive revenue forecast came in. We got more money coming in the door. Good times are here again. And here we go. And why would we want to save money again? So I think it's important for us to get this job done this time.
Appreciate it. Appreciate all the work that you've put in and your support of us passing something and making sure we get it done this session. I think that's right on, is that when new folks are here, the desire will probably be lessened in 3 or 4 years. Other comments or questions? Thank you very much.
Senator
Pozanski.
I guess just from a historical perspective, I know in 95, 97, 97 we actually had a big push to try to actually do a reserve fund when Speaker Lundquist was not able to get that to happen, and that was good times. And then it's just, I mean, I just find it very frustrating that in 99 we sent something out to the voters that basically put us in a situation now we have to go back and say we've made a mistake, because basically we locked the kicker in without putting in any safeguards for a reserve or stability fund, which clearly if we would have taken that to the voters, they would have passed it then. And now, you know, for those who were here in 2001, saw the fallout and what y'all had to do in 2002 in those five special sessions. So, yeah, I think I agree with both of senators. It's time for us to take the lead and admit that we, you know, as much as we want to make certain the money goes back to the people, we also need to be, as Senator Starr says, prudent with that money and making sure that we wisely invest it where we need to make certain that these vital programs that they've told us they want can't be funded without a detriment to other programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks.
What's next? What's this? Open a closed public hearing on SJR 23. Open a public hearing on SJR 2. Again, Paul has walked us through the overview, and Senator Kurt Schrader of Canby is going to present his stabilization, education stability fund proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Kurt Schrader from Senate District 20, Canby, Oregon City, Gladstone, North Clackamas. Pleased to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. Well, the bills just get simpler and simpler, friends. This bill can sum up by having you refer to page 2 of the bill, line 41. It changes one number. How's that for being simple and understandable? Come on now. That it changes the cap on the Education Stability Fund from 5 to 10% of the approved revenues during the prior biennium. I think you've had some excellent testimony and some very thoughtful proposals. I wish mine was perhaps as thoughtful and as creative as some of the others. But I would respectfully suggest that this proposal is as simple, as understandable to the people of the state of Oregon, and as realistic in terms of actually passing something and getting something done as any of the proposals you've heard so far. Hopefully this committee will take the temperature of the body as we go through the legislative session. But if we really want to do something, I would suggest that the simplicity of SJR 2 lends itself to a positive vote by the people with virtually little or no campaign. Couple of comments, if I may, Mr. Chair. The simple bill raises the constitutional cap on Oregon's current rainy day fund, which is called the Education Stability Fund. I think it's important, as you all well know, but I think the public needs to know we have a rainy day fund. All this stuff about Oregon needs a rainy day fund, I shake my head and understand where was everybody in 2002 when we changed the endowment fund into the rainy day fund for the state of Oregon. We have one. The question is that adequately funded? And I agree with everyone that's been before you here today, and the answer is no in terms of the amount that it can get to. People have come up with some very creative ideas about, geez, how can we get money into it? And there's all the pros and cons. The voters don't want to deal with a kicker, and other people are afraid of cutting services to other programs that, you know, for the immediate needs, given our current budget situation. I said, why go down that road? Why fight that battle? We fought that battle, and we've lost in the first 2-3 sessions I had. It wasn't until the middle of the crisis and the depths of the recession that this legislature saw the light, Republicans and Democrats, Senate and House, and said, yeah, we need to create a stabilization fund. And we called it the Education Stability Fund. That was the appropriate, politically correct term that everyone could feel comfortable with. The education budget, the K-12 budget, is almost 50% of our state revenues. So I think if we just create a reasonable fund, stability fund, increase that level to a reasonable level and have that money flow into our education arena when times are tough, other general fund revenues can then go to the other critical services of human services, public safety. So this is really pretty simple. We already have a dedicated revenue source for this. You don't have to fight over it. The lottery. 18% of our lottery revenues go into this fund every year. Every biennium, excuse me. You know, that's $160 million. In 3.5, right now, the way the cap is, this stability fund, this rainy day fund, fills up in about 3.5 biennium, about 6 years. About 6+ years. We'll have hit $600 million with the revenue source we now have that everyone's agreed to, that's not controversial, is going into this fund right now. My proposal would increase that fund from $600 million, if we have a $12 billion budget, give or take a little bit, to $1.2 billion. That's 10%, roughly. Now, that's a much more reasonable stabilization fund. That's one that could not quite withstand the recession we just had, but come pretty close. And I'm open. If 10% is too low, then make it 15. But to get to the 10% takes about 7 biennium. Takes about 12, 13 years. Question in your minds would be, well, geez, you know, we might have another recession before then. Fine. Let's change. If you need to, I think a worthy discussion is change the percentage of the lottery going into that. Make a little bit more, perhaps. But this is a very simple way. If you're truly interested in creating an adequate reserve, rainy day fund, education stability fund, whatever term you want to use for it, this is the simple, easy way to go about it. It's not relatively non-controversial. I don't see how anyone could really object to increasing the number so more money flows in over a longer period of time to make sure our vital services are protected when tough times come. I think it's a great message, a great bipartisan message from this assembly that we can go ahead and do something like this. I urge a positive consideration of this bill, sir.
Thank you. And I just want to put out the word that if another state senator comes in this room, we're nearing quorum, so no state senator, please walk into hearing room A.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you notice that we have this plethora of Ways and Means people here, I thought they had work to do. What's
not right now.
So questions for Senator Schrader. Prior to your arrival, Senator Morris walked us through, and maybe you were here, and I don't know if you've seen this, but it's an important document that I think we should all be more conversant in, and it largely, and I don't know if we can get Senator Schrader a copy of this, but the basic premise behind it is that because of voter initiative, we have in part because of decisions that we've made, chiefly the health plan, that we have driven a structural deficit in the state. And so the proposals that are being advanced following Senator Morris's all, in some ways, and I'm part of this because I have a bill in that's of similar natures of Senator Starr's and yours and the governor's, in some ways doesn't confront that central question to the voters, frankly, if when we go back to the voters, which of all of these we have to, if we have a structural deficit and we have to address it, and I guess the strength I see in Senator Morris's proposal is in some ways it directly talks to voters about that question of using a portion of new revenue, which would be the kicker revenue, to fund your 10% fund. I don't know if you have comment regarding all of these that would have to go to the voters, but chiefly that his worksheet certainly, I think, had a big impact on at least a few of us up here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yeah, I think Senator Morris has done an outstanding job. At the end of 2003, he spent a considerable amount of time and resources to really analyze, you know, what was our problem, why did the spending increase the way it did. People don't seem to want to listen to the fact that we do have certain initiatives that have doubled our spending. It really isn't us. It really isn't a function of what we've done budgetarily over the years. It's the initiative process that's driven that. People don't really want to hear that. I guess I don't like to hear that I'm at fault for certain things, too, but that's the real life. I think that this is a good proposal, an excellent proposal. The kicker, though, has taken on a life of its own, and it'd be difficult sell. I was encouraged to hear the polling numbers that he had. If you want to stimulate a discussion about the structural deficit, I think his proposal is superior to mine, quite frankly, in all honesty. It depends on what the wishes of this committee is. Stimulating a discussion or actually creating the fund, one may not be in contradiction to the other, but certainly it's a higher hill to climb, as we've heard from others that have testified. And it's certainly, this is a really worthy discussion for your committee to have. I would say that as I was listening to the conversation, the flip side is on the budget side. I really feel that this legislative session is a watershed, and either we address some of the structural issues in the budget process or we're also kidding ourselves. And I think that's part of a public process that we've all agreed on, Republicans and Democrats, both sides of the building, that we're trying to lay out the choices that we have had to make over the last couple of years that we've shielded Oregonians from. We've probably shielded some of our policy committee members, frankly, from it by doing the work we do in Ways and Means. And it's nothing sneaky. It's nothing swami. There's no magic to it. It's just making tough, hard choices. But perhaps we haven't been done as good a job in communicating the tough choices we've made and some of the structural deficit changes we have made, Mr. Chair. As you can see, there's 75,000 people that no longer get health care courtesy of the taxpayers in the state of Oregon. We've had to ask hospitals and managed care organizations to step up and take care of that. There's 6,000 seniors that no longer are eligible for long-term care in our system because we can't afford to take care of those people that previously we were able to take care of. That's a structural change in how we're budgeting right now. And there's a number of others. We're no longer doing juvenile crime prevention the way we're going to do. We've reduced the Healthy Start program, which was to try and get people early in the system. We can't afford that good program at this point in time. We're unfortunately having to concentrate on people on the back end. And so we've made some structural changes. I guess I'd like a little encouragement that we've done a few good things. We have a lot more to go. I would agree with Senator Morris and Senator Starr that we have more to go in the budget arena, and I appreciate his efforts here. I think this is definitely worthy of discussion, but it depends on what outcome and what your main goal is as a committee.
Other questions for Senator Schrader? Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate all your hard and diligent work on
that number of stuff.
Just we'll leave it to everything other than this bill that you contribute to. Senator Devlin is already here, and I haven't opened a public hearing. Close public hearing on SJR 2. And Julie, we'll get to you just as soon as we get done with this. Open public hearing on SJR 19. Senator Devlin, Paul has walked us through the overview of your bill, so appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I do think it's interesting here that at least the parties that I've identified here that are sitting with me, that you have two members of both caucuses and you have three members that have been working on Ways and Means for some time. I think all of us and many people in the building, probably practically all of the Senate and many members of the House, clearly recognize the need for a stability fund and also see that a stability fund at our current levels is beneficial but perhaps is not entirely adequate. One of the things in terms of looking at different measures, and I think my bottom line is simply just that we need to improve the stability fund, but when I look at different options, some of the options that have been presented in previous meetings and at this meeting, I think have good aspects and bad aspects, including the one I'm going to present to you. I guess the most notable in terms of bad aspects was the bucket plan. We sat through many hearings on the bucket plan in the tax reform committee. Although there is some clear evidence that it's potentially a very positive with the Oregon public to enact some type of spending limitation, there's probably not a clear recognition that we already have a spending limitation or that we already have a stability fund, as Senator Schrader has pointed out. The biggest problem that I had with portions of the bucket plan, other than I didn't think it was good public policy, was the way it was presented. How it was presented is Measure 5, when it took into effect, we all recognize, required the state to replace funding for K through 12 for a period of 5 years. Now, you could say that the state after 5 years didn't have to do it, but that would be sort of a hypothetical, mythical sort of argument. But what they did is they started the bucket plan a year before that transfer actually was completed. So they failed to recognize $1 billion in additional costs that had to be picked up from Measure 5. Once you pick up that additional $1 billion, then there is no funds going out to the public and there is no reserve being established under their criteria. I think they knew that, they understood that, and that's why they presented the data the way they did, because once they recognized that $1 billion, it would not work. We all have looked at kicker provisions before in terms of trying to increase the stability fund. I think that's a worthwhile thing to look at. Obviously, there is the issue that the voters recently have approved putting the kicker into the Constitution, and I think we also have to keep in mind that the kicker that we might get in the future is not the kicker that we've had in the past, if you're looking for it as a predictable revenue source. We're getting much better in terms of our predictions, particularly on the personal side, and kickers in the future may be relatively small compared to what we have seen in the past. A new proposal that's been put on the table, or may have been put on the table already, is utilizing the ending balance. That's an interesting discussion because one of the discussions that I think should occur there is how it would change the dynamics and the culture of governmental organizations. I don't know if you would get into a scenario where people would basically plan ahead and try to have a significant ending balance, knowing that they would be bolstering a reserve fund that would help them in the future, or I don't know if they would actually say, this isn't going to be their next biennium for me if I have it in an ending balance, and I'm going to spend it before the end of the biennium so that it at least is some benefit to me now. There have also been proposals to use both the 3% or 4% of the total general fund. Well, I think those would be lofty goals in our budget environment, and I think many of the Ways and Means members that are here would tell you this. It's very difficult to get to those levels of set-asides. Current biennium with current projections for revenue, I believe that would be between $366 million set aside and $488 million set aside, 3 versus 4%. That brings me to the measure that I'm putting on the table, which Senator Schrader was a pretty good segue to that measure. It's SJR 19. It's modeled, actually, after Measure 19, the Education Stability Fund that the voters have approved. It is actually very simplistic, and I think Mr. Warner has probably explained how simplistic it is. If you look at the bill, you see how few items in the bill are actually in bold language. What it basically does is it adjusts the lottery dedication percentages. It keeps the 18% for the 2005 biennium, 20% for the 2007, 22% for the 2009, and then stops it at 22% in 2009. Given our current revenue projections, that would equal $169 million this biennium, $195 million the next biennium, $232 billion the following biennium. The interesting thing is by taking just 2% and not taking much more in terms of increasing it from 18 to 20 to 22, the amount of the lottery that would still be discretionary and still available for programs in terms of education, economic development, maybe not state police, but but available, would still be a growing revenue source at that level, because it will probably grow at a faster rate than that, so you would still actually have a revenue source that was increasing there. It does increase the cap for the stability fund to 10% of the general fund versus 5%, and I think those reasons have been discussed here already. It retains all the existing triggers in terms of the existing stability fund, and it actually retains the existing dedication of earnings from that stability fund, such things as the debt service on education bonds, need-based college scholarships. This is an area that I think I didn't open up the door, but maybe one of the things that you could consider is capping the portion of the education stability fund that goes to those items. Because one of the reasons the stability fund does not grow faster is because you do not retain the earnings from the stability fund. You only retain the principal. If you retained a portion of the earnings, the stability fund would probably grow much faster. It also retains something that I think, if we ever got to that point and the economy stays stable that long, it retains the capital matching subaccount when the 10% threshold is reached, and then would dedicate slightly less than the 22%, would dedicate 20% of lottery funds to that fund. I think that's clearly a very beneficial item when you realize that probably over 50% of our school buildings in this state are over 50 years old, and that the amount that is we have in terms of deferred maintenance in the state is huge. That could be generating by that time, who knows how much, $300 million, $350 million a biennium by the time we got to a 10%. That would be a fairly sizable chunk to really start to address some of those issues. This proposal is simple. It is simple for the voters to understand. It's a straightforward dedication of revenue. It isn't counting on something that may or may not happen. It's stable. It's tied to an unfortunately, a potentially expanding revenue source. I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it is an expanding revenue source. And there's clearly no smoke and mirrors in this measure. You're making a choice. You're saying you're going to dedicate an additional 2% in the next biennium, 2% after that, and 22% until the time you get to that 10% general fund. Relatively simple proposal, I think a simple one to present to the voters, and that's why I'm putting it forward. And I thank the chair and the committee members for listening.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, very much for the work that you put into. You get great insight into our colleagues as they put these proposals, because Senator Schrader's is just a straight one number change, and yours is a little more complicated, but definitely gives us a little more food for thought in terms of how we structure the stability fund. So we appreciate the work. Questions for Senator Devlin? Do you fear at all, and I agree with you, that it's relatively straightforward, but the voters who are not as familiar with the lottery and the general fund and the work that we do in this building in some ways might get confused on referrals? The no vote always tends to lead the yes vote if there's any level of confusion. Do you think that there could be?
I can speak very frankly about this, and I hope the chairman understands why I'm speaking frankly. I think any measure that the legislature refers is an orphan, unless, and I don't mean to use the word orphan negatively, but unless there is a support base out there for the measure to explain it to the public. I think that given the proper sort of explanation to the public, I think a measure like this or some of the other measures you've heard could stand a reasonable chance of passage. This is a relatively small change in the system, although it does lead to a much quicker growth in terms of what the stability fund, the amount of the stability fund is. But I think actually any time that we refer something out, we should keep in mind, A, what the general public's reaction might be to that measure, and two, are there parties out there that are willing to back the measure? I don't actually see this measure really generating a lot of opposition. A, it's not tied to a revenue source that the public identifies as something that they pay. If it was something that they pay, then I would say that it might have some trouble. The other thing is that it's so modest that I think it could be presented as more simply just an effort by the legislature to react in a stronger fashion than they did to the original stability fund, and I think would stand a chance for passage. I mean, one of the things about the stability fund I think that's not often remembered is many people don't really recognize, including new members of the legislature coming into the House, that we already have a stability fund. And two, they don't recognize that the voters voted on it twice. They passed it the second time. And I think the memories are still fresh enough in people's minds. Our budget situation is still relatively lean, that they still probably recognize the need for improving the stability fund. I don't know how long that public recognition is going to be out there, but I think it would be good to strike while that recognition is there. I do have a that could obviously be changed in this bill or any bill, but I would have this referred in this bill to the November 2006 election. That's because I think that's going to be the greatest turnout election that we will have, and I think it has an opportunity to be discussed fully in the public arena in the general election in 2006.
And you think in 2006 we're still fresh in folks' minds?
I believe that we would be. The difficulty I have with elections before that, the primary in 2006 might be fine, but I don't expect that the turnout is going to be anything stellar in the May primary this year, and probably even less in the November election this year. And I don't think that there is the sort of a broad public discussion of public political policy issues that you have in the general election. And I can see quite honestly that whatever comes out of this, I think most of the people that here have testified, members of the Senate, are committed to improving the stability fund. And I don't see this becoming a partisan issue. I think we can refer something out on the stability fund that is not a partisan issue and shouldn't really face much opposition from any organized group.
Questions for Senator Devlin? Comments? Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Well, let's get our Rick Bennett from AARP, Don Schellenberg from the Farm Bureau, and then Julie from Community Colleges. And if you don't mind just staying on this, you can talk on any of the bills kind of generally, but we're going to stay on this public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP Oregon. Past history and presentations that you had yesterday clearly make the case for a rainy day fund, so I won't take up your time going over all that again. I just indicate that AARP Oregon supports the creating of rainy day funds and also spending those funds when necessary. We believe it should be a part of a balanced approach for maintaining services during an economic downturn. Senator Schrader mentioned that you do in fact have a rainy day fund, the Education Stability Fund, but as indicated, that covers maybe only 50 to 55% of the budget. And while he indicated that with that stability fund, general fund dollars could be used for the rest of the budget, I have some concern as to whether in an economic downturn whether you would have general fund dollars to support health services and public safety. And that would be the reason for still establishing a rainy day fund for general purpose. One other point that I had not heard in the presentations yesterday is that the spending of rainy day funds can bolster the overall economic activity so that states can emerge more quickly from an economic downturn. Obviously, state government is spending and putting a lot of dollars back into the economy. And when it's down, cutting services and cutting spending can have negative effect on the economic conditions of the time. So just one more point for support of rainy day funds. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Bennett, do you, and I know this is probably premature to even ask, but do you think AARP, we're trying to gauge a public vote on this, and would oppose expansion of a stability, education stability fund, or even put a statement in against, and I know this is probably too early to ask, but given your comments on that it does really only affect about half the budget, that could be a concern that AARP might have.
I believe that we would, of course, we don't know the final details of the specific measure, but I have to believe at this point that AARP would support any ballot measure related to creating a rainy day fund.
Even if it's within the parameters of it. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
One more point. I signed up for the for SGR 23 and 2029, but that should not suggest that we are not supportive of the other measures that would strengthen the education fund. But it does exist for that purpose, and so we'd like to see the rainy day fund for general purpose established as well. Thank you.
And if you find yourself landing, I mean, this is going to be tough work for this committee, sorting through four today and two more coming. If you find yourself landing on one or two proposals, that would help us. Other questions for Mr. Bennett? Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Too, would like to compliment the senators that have testified before us and their hard work, time, and energy on this issue. Having a reserve fund is a very important issue. In my written testimony, which I'll give you, I share with you Farm Bureau's position on reserve fund and the different criteria. They've went into some detail. Granted, Farm Bureau is not going to be the big player in this issue. On the other hand, farmers and ranchers over the years have had much experience in managing budgets and getting through tough times. And so while we're not the big players, they still have a lot of experience and knowledge on this issue, and would suggest that you you compare the Farm Bureau's position and their particulars on this issue with any bill that comes along along this line. So suffice it to say, we support the 23, 29, everything that's been said here this morning within the confines of our policy. I just wanted to get on the record on that regard today. And I won't go into more detail, Mr. Chairman. I know you've got a lot of things to do. And thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you, Don. Do you find yourself supporting one over the other, or just at this point see a lot of good work out there for us to...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, not at this point. No, a lot of good work out there. Just technically from a policy perspective, we have our policy, and we look for those bills that are closest aligned with our policy, and those that don't align with it, we would suggest you amend them so they do align with it.
That's a nice lobbying 101 or association management 101. Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll try it. Miss Sue Honeck.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes, it's close enough. for the record, my name is Julie Sahonik. With the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 Oregon community colleges and also over 330,000 Oregonians. We just wanted to get on the record today that as you discuss the Education Stability Fund, while we think the focus often is on the sectors, that it is a fund that does assist the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program, which is the only state-based need, which is the only need-based state-funded grant program at the state. The interest earned from the Education Stability Fund does go to the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program and does have a profound effect. We know that last session you were faced with the difficult charge of reducing the Education Stability Fund, and that did reduce the funds to the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program, which in turn decreased access for thousands of community college students. We really appreciate this bill and also Senate Joint Resolution 29 because they do look at efforts to provide stable funding, and as we are looking to develop a strong workforce in the future years, we know that education will be a key factor in that, and access to that education will be invaluable.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Do you have a number of that when the interest does not go to the opportunity grant, do you have a figure or ballpark figure of how much that is?
We know that in terms of students affected.
Yeah, either students affected or how many millions of dollars are we talking?
Just roughly speaking, prior to those bills that reduced that funding, it was around like $2 million. We're now in like the $700,000 range. And we're looking at roughly grants that range from $1,200 to $3,000. So it's quite a few students.
So that's the parameters we're working on the interest on the stability fund. It's about $700 to $2 million. And then you can just divide that by a couple thousand dollars. Huh. Okay, it'd be good to know.
I can get you that detailed information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Laurie Wimmer? And then anyone else who wants to talk Stability Fund with us, we're going to come back to. So what we're going to do is we're going to come back to this, hear the other two bills that we have, and then get a sense of the committee. And I'm meeting with Representative Butler on Thursday to talk about this, and so we'll get a sense of where the House is, and then probably want to move forward in one chamber or the other in the coming weeks. Ms. Wimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the Oregon Education Association. It's 43,000 members in community colleges in K-12. Just wanted to give you a couple thoughts on the record from one of those larger players, I would imagine. First of all, we'd like to thank all of the senators for their good thoughts and work on this, as well as for your leadership on this issue. We really think that it is far past time to finally get serious about a meaningful and adequately capitalized stabilization fund. We have been involved in this issue for as long as I've been in this building on behalf of the Oregon Education Association, and I think my predecessors were as well. We do have some thoughts about the pros and cons, as Senator Devlin outlined for you. Chiefly among them is the capitalization issue. And we've had some contact with your staff about this, about whether it is better to capitalize the fund with lottery revenues or kicker revenues, or and which one grows the fund more quickly, given that we've also heard that you have down cycles more frequently than perhaps some of these proposals would capitalize them to be of value. So we would urge the committee to take a strong look at which one would get us where we need to be in time for the next economic downturn. The only caveat we would have to that is that we cannot support a proposal that would take it out of existing revenues from the general fund, particularly when we are cutting programs and have, you know, in the case of K-12 for the last 3 years have cut $800 million, and unless the Senate Democrats have their way, stand to lose $400 million more in the next 2 years. We can't see that. The analogy I've used in the past is that in the home budget, if a family puts away their grocery money so that they can save for that Harvard tuition someday, what is it that they're going to be sending to college? Will the kids survive without food? And, you know, that may be a little bit of an extreme metaphor, but the point, I think, is not lost on you. We feel that fiscal prudence is one thing, but in times of shortfall, that becomes really problematic. And we are still in times of shortfall, obviously. Friday's better news notwithstanding. If you see it as we see it, there's a $1 billion hole in the general fund on Thursday, and there was an $800 million hole in the general fund on Friday. So the second question for us is political viability. We, too, are concerned that whatever it is that this body might report out would, in fact, be embraced by the public rather than having a Mount Everest to climb to get passage. And considering that we would probably be a partner in that, we would want to make sure that we knew for a fact which one would work best. And finally, Whether or not the fund is dedicated explicitly to education or not, we think is really a shell game. It's just a matter of perspective, because if it's an education stability enhancement or improvement, in theory, in the next downturn, you're using the fund for that, but then you have general fund revenues on the table that get deployed to the other programs. So I think that, you know, it's not a matter of benefiting one set of programs over the other. It's simply a matter of how you move the shells around the table. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, no, thank you for appreciate the thoughts, questions, or comments from Swimmer Whaling. Well, we'll be looking for some March 15th is kind of the date I've set of when we would finish considering these and start moving forward on votes. And so some of the groups that are really involved and might be really involved in a campaign to pass it in the business community and in education community, we certainly would appreciate their insight into getting not just the vote here, but the second vote, if we do actually as a legislature choose to move forward on one of these.
We hear you, Senator.
Yes, ma'am. I didn't see you at our coffee place this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jacqueline Zimmer, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. Thank you for this quick moment, and I'm just going to echo a little bit about the human services impact from something like a rainy day fund, and I think you heard it from Rick Bennett as well, and that is that we're very concerned about the concept of a rainy day fund being asked to shift any of our existing resources into a rainy day fund, and so we like some of the proposals that are out there using kicker money and so forth. But even more concerning to us is that there be some sort of formula, plan, discussion for distribution of those funds once a rainy day fund reaches its goal. And we're looking at $88 million in reductions in programs for seniors and people with disabilities this session. We know of a significant number of people who died from losing services last session. And so, you know, we'd really be interested in what some of the criteria is for distribution of these funds. And so we want to just kind of, I'm sure you're talking about that. I'm usually in Ways and Means when you're meeting. But just to kind of keep that in mind, that when it rains very hard in human services. And so if you ever come to some sort of decision about how to use the fund, we'd sure like to be considered very strongly. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Thank you very much. I think that that gets it. So for those of you who weren't here, it's March 1st, Paul's birthday, so everyone be nice to Paul Warner, like always today. And we'll return. Well, Paul, what are we tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, we turn back to your discussion on tax compliance tomorrow. We have Senate Bill 480. Dexter... is anticipating finishing your amendment tonight. So we'll get a first look at that tomorrow morning based on the discussion that you had 2 weeks ago. So you have a first look at that, and then we have another Department of Revenue bill related to penalties. So we're kind of back to the tax compliance issue for a day before we go to low-income housing on Friday.
Great. Great. And then the goal would be to vote that out Friday, but we'll have to make sure we're ready before we do that and the bill's ready for a Friday vote. Any other thoughts or comments? Senator George is, I'm told, feeling better. So that's almost better, as you put it. We stand adjourned.